Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today is another crowdsourced episode from Instagram where I've been given the suggestion to talk about healing on a budget. Now, I actually have kind of covered this topic in the past when I did a listener Q&A, but I thought it might be helpful just to have a full podcast episode dedicated towards healing on a budget. Because if you have been living through this chronic illness experience, you will probably already know that it is financially devastating if your ability to work has been impacted. And then secondly, it can be expensive business, whether you are working with practitioners, you're investing in testing, you're buying supplements, you're buying special foods to meet your dietary requirements. That money can add up very quickly. And of course, there are no guarantees that any of it can help necessarily. So let's talk a little bit today about how to work towards better health when you have financial limitations. And where I'd like to start first and foremost is just to talk about privilege. The more I do this work, the more I see clients, the more I talk with people who are in different financial situations, the more I witness the journey of all sorts of different people, I really do believe that in this day and age, healing is a privilege and health is a privilege. And it is the unfortunate truth that those who have greater financial means have the ability to potentially do more, whether that's work with certain practitioners, invest in expensive supplements or treatments, get testing, whatever it might be, just also have less stress and pressure on their nervous system because they have more financial means. That all being said, I think it's really important that we don't create a story about our ability to heal based on our financial means. So just because you may be limited in terms of what you can invest in your health and healing, it doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot make progress, that you cannot improve your quality of life. It just might mean that we need to manage expectations about the pace of the journey. The journey may need to be perhaps a little bit slower and also might look a little bit different. So we want to just be really realistic in what we expect from ourselves and also not to let some of the frustration about what we can't do or what we can't afford get in the way of seeing what is possible and what we can do. That's a really good place to start, is just starting to become aware of your belief systems about what is possible for you based on the means that you have available. And then I guess the rest of this episode is maybe just opening up some options for you, getting you to think about things in a certain way, think about where perhaps money could be spent if you do have some money to spend, and everything else in between. Where I usually like to start when I'm working with clients, so when clients are coming to see me and they're paying me for my expertise, the first thing we always work on is stabilizing that person. And if you've listened to some of the other podcast episodes, you've probably heard me talk about this many times now, this concept of stability. And the things that we generally require for stability are stabilizing blood sugar, supporting the nervous system, and just overall reducing stress and stimulation and increasing rest. Making sure we've got a good sleep routine, which means we're going to bed at the same time, waking at the same time, and ideally exposing ourselves to sunlight first thing in the morning to create a stable circadian rhythm. Then we also want to make sure we're pacing. We're moving through the day with periods of activity and periods of rest. And that should be tailored to where we are in our journey. For some people, they'll be able to do a lot of activity with little bits of rest. And then other people will need to do a lot of resting with little bits of activity. And then depending on where you are in your journey, you may also want to have a stable movement routine. So alongside the daily movements of your life and activities of daily living, you maybe also are doing a little bit of yoga or going for a walk or something like that. And that again should be very just consistent and stable. You're doing the same amount each week. You've got day rest days. You've got a structured plan that you're following. You're not necessarily doing like an hour's walk and then not doing anything for 3 days. Everything is really routine and stable. So for the most part, a lot of those stabilizing variables you can do at low or no cost. So they're free. It's free to create a sleep routine and get your sunlight in the morning. Unless, of course, maybe you need to buy a special lamp or something if you live in the Northern Hemisphere and it's winter time. But apart from that, you can stabilize your circadian rhythms and your sleep routine for free. Pacing is free. A movement routine is free. You can do certain stress management and nervous system practices for free using, for example, I have a free workshop on getting to know your nervous system, which has got some really great tools for beginners who are learning more about their nervous system. There's YouTube for things like yoga. There's Insight Timer for things like yoga nidra or meditation or any other kind of nervous system or stress management practices that could potentially be supportive. There are, managing blood sugar obviously comes at an expense because you have to buy the foods that are appropriate for blood sugar management. Freestyle Libre, at least here in the UK, offers a CGM for free. So you can get a 2-week use of a continuous glucose monitor for free before you need to start paying for one, which I often ask my clients to do just so that we can start to check in with their glucose and see how they're doing as we start working together. I've got resources on my website talking about blood sugar management, both for hyper and hypoglycemia. You just need to go on my website and search blood sugar and all the different options will come up. Or if you have a small budget for £49, you can buy my blood sugar mini course where there's a bit more structure and there's a step-by-step process to help you identify issues with your blood sugar, and then, of course, improve your understanding in terms of how you can suggest them. So at the very least, one should be able to stabilize themselves for free or at low or at a very low cost. And that is a great starting point for healing. I'll say it once and I'll say it 100 times. Do not underestimate the impact of the basics on your health. These basic foundations we do with almost every single client who walks through our door, even when they've seen multiple different practitioners, even when they've been ill for a really long time and they think they know everything they need to know, they're always blind spots when it comes to these basic factors. And despite me talking about some of these things all the time and having loads of free resources available, people still come and see us and they still have work to do in these areas. So do not underestimate the possible potential impact of taking those 5 things that I've mentioned and beginning to make changes in those areas and do that all for free. Obviously, there's always complex cases. There's always people who need a little bit more nuanced and support or handholding. There might be more advanced dietary interventions which are necessary, like following a paleo diet, for example, giving up gluten, maybe following an autoimmune paleo diet, maybe following a low histamine diet, maybe following a low FODMAP diet. But for the most part, you can find information on all of those diets for free on the internet. And if you kind of get a sense, well, you know, you've got some autoimmune stuff going on, maybe you try the autoimmune diet. If you've got some symptoms that seem a little bit more histamine-y, maybe you can try the histamine diet. If you're getting a lot of bloating or gastrointestinal issues, maybe the low FODMAP diet is a great place for you to start. So again, we can do those basic stabilizing factors and then advance into more specialized diets depending on our needs. And yes, it might be a case of trial and error because you don't have someone saying, this is what you need to do, but you can do it at a very low cost. The only thing that it will cost you is the cost of the foods and the dietary changes. But many people often feel like they need to buy like expensive, fancy ingredients when they're doing these diets. And actually, that isn't true. It's just real, whole, unprocessed food, meat and vegetables for the most part, maybe a little bit of fruit, maybe some nuts and seeds if they're tolerated within your dietary constraints. And that's it. So it's not really that complicated. I think sometimes people want to make it more complicated than it needs to be, perhaps because there's a little bit of overthinking, there's a little bit of health anxiety. You know, there can be sometimes some confusion if there's a lot of food reactions and things like that. But for the most part, it can be a really simple process. So that's kind of just talking through the basics and the things that you can do for free to at the very least stabilize your body, but possibly just through repetition, even start to make some really good progress. Then we can start to think about what some of your other needs are and again, low cost or no cost interventions that you could take. So things that might be free would be listening to podcasts, reading blogs, watching YouTube, and things which might be low cost would be maybe buying something like a mini course on my website. So I have a quiz on my website. You can take the quiz. It will identify for you based on your answers what the priority areas for you are based on a lot of the things we see that our clients struggle with. Those priority areas are usually around blood sugar management, detoxification, digestive health, and oxygenation issues. And then nervous system and just knowing if there's any other root cause that needs to be addressed. So when you get the results as a percentage. So you can see basically, okay, this area is the most important. This area is the second most important. This area is the third most important and so on and so on. And then if you have the means for £49, you can buy a mini course to address that area. And you can kind of see which are the most important areas. So it might be you start with blood sugar. Then once your blood sugar is a bit more stable, you could move on to gut and so on and so on and just work your way through in your own time. Something else you could do, which is also low cost, would be to buy books. Books often offer a much more comprehensive understanding than a blog or a podcast. A book that I would recommend might be Dr. Mai Hill's book. So she's recently this year published her latest book, which is Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Myalgic Encephalitis, and Long COVID. It's a really great handbook. It's a handbook that I wish I had had at the time of falling unwell myself, just to kind of give you a basic understanding of what's happening in your body, how to associate symptoms with things that are imbalanced, so associating symptoms with mechanisms. And then she really does focus on a lot of low-cost solutions in terms of low-cost supplements and things that can be potentially very helpful. So you could start even with her book, or you could start with some of the stabilizing factors that I've already discussed, or you could start with a mini course. Obviously, it's hard when there's a lot going on and you're getting all this information from podcasts and blogs and social media and books and everything. And then there can be a little bit of overwhelm. There can be a little bit of paralysis analysis because there is so much information. And I guess that's when it can be really helpful to work with a practitioner who can review your case, understand what's going on for you, and then make specific recommendations that will be priority for you. In which case, if you do feel like you need some external support, it might be worthwhile looking into student consultations. So when I did my training, which was almost 15 years ago now, we had to do a certain amount of practical training where we as students would see clients with the mentorship of a qualified practitioner. So you have a qualified practitioner in the room and you have yourself, the student in the room, and then the client. And so these consultations were offered for free. This was long before we had Zoom or anything like that. So, you know, the client would have to travel to the location and they would have the travel costs. If they bought any supplements, they would have the expense of the supplements. If they did any testing, they would have the expense of the testing. But the actual consultation time with the student was free. And so that might be an opportunity to look into, is there are various locations, I assume, across the country where students are training and they're always looking for clients. I studied through the Center for Nutrition Education and Lifestyle Management, which is associated with Middlesex University, but based in Wokingham. I do also believe there are several places in London which offer training. So, for example, ION, Institute of Optimum Nutrition. And then I think there is the London College of Naturopathic Medicine, if I remember correctly. And there may also be the opportunity to reach out to some of these institutions and ask if they need clients for their student practitioners. It's obviously not the same as seeing a practitioner who's got a lot of experience and being seeing lots of clients in this area, you know, for a long time. But if you've already worked on some of the basic foundations and now you're looking for that next level, more detailed information, or even just a few pointers to help you see the wood for the trees when there's so much information out there, then it might be worthwhile reaching out and then seeing if you can find some further support. It's always good to just kind of be open to what's out there. So even, for example, on my somatic experiencing training, one of the people I connected with through the training actually works for a charity where they offer very low cost somatic experiencing sessions. So these sessions are anywhere between 10 and 25 pounds a session to be able to do, which is obviously much cheaper than regular therapy. And even though there is a cost associated, there's a huge saving. So often when I'm working with people who are struggling financially, I might refer out to contacts who maybe are able to help at a lower cost as well. What I would say is that if you are working through all this information on your own, it's really important that you don't make too many changes at once. And that's what I would say, you know, even if you aren't doing it on your own, we don't want to make too many changes at once because we want to involve overwhelm and overburdening the nervous system. So it's always good to just try one or two new things, give them a little bit of time to sort of embed in the system, see how your body responds. And then you may get a positive response, you may get no response, you may get a negative response, and then you can decide your next action step after there. Obviously, that does take a little bit more time. And that's where we just have to manage expectations, is that this journey does take time. And we can only move as fast as the slowest part. And especially if you have limited financial means and you are trying to work everything out for yourself and do it on your own, then the journey will potentially look differently than if you've got someone there who's advising you all the time. But even when you've got someone who's advising you all the time, there's still going to be a certain amount of trial and error required. My other suggestion is find a GP who you can cultivate a good relationship with. We often hear, you know, there's a lot of negative feedback more so than positive feedback when it comes to GPs in terms of not necessarily feeling supported or not feeling seen and heard and understood, and in some cases even gaslit. And obviously, this is different depending on where you are in the world and your healthcare system. But speaking for the English healthcare system and the NHS, is that we do have the benefit of free healthcare. And if you have access to it, even though it can be exhausting when you already are exhausted, you want to try and just make the most of what is available. And that might mean self-advocating. So going to the doctor with a list of things that you want to discuss or a list of tests that you would like to ask for, and really engaging with them and, you know, being curious and asking questions and really building a relationship with your doctor so that you get them on your side. And it might mean that you need to maybe try a few different doctors in the practice and, you know, give it a few goes to sort of build that longer term relationship, but really trying to get as much as you can from the free support system could also potentially be very helpful. Another thing to consider is the recently launched Turn2 app. So the Turn2 app, it was founded by Jess Dove, who I'm hoping to have on the podcast sometime in the near future. And she created this app when they were told that there were no treatment options for her son, who was living with a rare type of cerebral palsy. And she basically went on this mission to do lots of personal research and connect with other people and create networks and really find a handful of life-changing treatments that have made a difference to her son's life and her life as a consequence. And they have recently launched an app now to offer research and information to people who live with long COVID and ME/CFS. So that could also potentially be a really great resource if you're looking for information that you can then take to your GP for some credibility, because they do share like research papers that you could, you know, you could take a copy of the paper, or you could take the app to your GP and say, I'm interested in exploring this. What tests can we do? What treatment options are available? And really have those open-ended discussions with your GP and build up some sort of relationship and some sort of rapport. And I think if you can be an open-minded and pleasant person and get the GP on your side by showing willingness and cooperation, you know, there can be some really, really supportive GPs out there who really want to do their best to help you and to see you thrive. And then the final option, well, the options to consider, I would say, is saving and gifting. I would start with gifting and just say that this can be a tricky thing to do, because if we've got a birthday present or we're having a Christmas present and our life is already so small because of what we're experiencing, we might want something that just brings us joy instead of saying, oh, could you pay for me to have this test done? Or could you pay for me to get this red light or this sauna blanket or whatever it might be? Maybe there's other things that we would really like to be gifted. But perhaps it might be possible for you to ask for gifting if you do have a birthday or a Christmas present, or, you know, family members or friends who could pull together and raise some money to support you with something that you really feel would be helpful for you. That could be another way to maybe invest in some of those higher ticket items, whether it is some practitioner fees or some testing or some supplements for a specific protocol or some kind of, you know, external device, whether it's a, you know, vagus nerve stimulator or a red light therapy device or a sauna blanket or a PMF mat, you know, anything that you might want to explore. Obviously, it's really tricky because it does create a lot of pressure. If you're having this gift and these people have clubbed together to give you this money to spend on this thing, you really want to make sure that you spend your money on the right thing and it's a success. And that does create a lot of pressure. So just to speak to that, I'd say is like, do your research, really be mindful of the decision that you make and where you want to spend the money, but also be open to the fact that it might not necessarily be the right thing at the right time. I know I bought myself a red light. And then for Christmas one year, I got this, like the stand was a Christmas present so that I could lie down underneath it and I wouldn't have to sit up in front of this red light. But at the end of the day, the red light didn't really make such a big difference and I ended up selling it. And then that was, you know, an unfortunate loss. But we also just have to be open to the fact that not everything is going to work all the time, and sometimes money will get wasted. And unfortunately, that is the nature of the beast. And, you know, if there was anything we could do to change that or minimize that, we would absolutely want to do that, but it's just not always possible. In a similar line is if you do have the ability to save. I know a lot of people perhaps going through a chronic illness experience have no income, or they're on benefits, or they're living off of their savings and there isn't any extra income for saving. But if you do have the ability to save, or you do have the ability to tuck a little bit of money away and then keep on doing all the free stuff, working on all the basics, doing all the stabilizing tools that I mentioned. And then you could invest a little bit of savings into something that would help to move the needle forward, whether it is, you know, consultation with a nutritional therapist or a functional medicine practitioner or a course that you wanted to do for your nervous system or something like that. We can then use little bits of money to kind of do those extra things that we just don't feel confident to do on our own. So those are just some suggestions for today. And hopefully those suggestions have given you at least a little bit of food for thought in terms of what you can do to move the needle forward. What I think I really want you to take away from this episode, if you do have a limited budget, is thinking of it less as like, I don't have the means to do X, Y, and Z, therefore I'm stuck. And rather just think of, with the means I have, what could I do? Or are there things that I know I should be doing that I could be doing better? Like, could I be pacing better? Could I be working more on my nervous system? Could I be working more on my blood sugar? Are there things that actually are within my means and are within my capabilities that I'm just not doing as well as what I could be? So take a moment to reflect on that. Are you limiting yourself by creating a story about what's possible? If you could do anything at this point in time with what you already know and what you already have, what could that be that could maybe make the difference? And it's not about getting, you know, 10 steps ahead. What could you do that is within your power to move one step ahead or two steps ahead? And what would that look like for you? And I think I've shared this on a previous episode, but even today, I know there's things that I already know I should do, that I could be doing better, that I just don't do because I can kind of get away with it. But I know that I could feel even better if I was pacing more consistently and if I was resting more and working a little bit more on my nervous system. I'm probably not working so much and doing as much exercise. I could probably feel better. So really be honest with yourself about what is within your capacity, what is within your means, and then how you can take that little step forward. So I hope you have enjoyed listening to this today. I hope it has offered some insight for you, and I will see you in the next episode.